Hi everybody, this is Eiko Fried from the University of Amsterdam and the Psych Methods Department, and I'm here in Groningen with Laura Brinkman. Hi Laura.
Hi.
We have a meeting today about getting clinical practice and methodology or network psychometrics a bit closer together, and I traveled all the way to Groningen and I thought I should pick your brain because you are working on a project at the moment that does exactly that, trying to get clinical practice and methods closer together. But before we talk about this, would you introduce yourself a bit?
Yes. So I'm an assistant professor at the University of Groningen at the Statistics and Psychometrics Department. And I'm also affiliated with the Interdisciplinary Center of Psychopathology and Emotion Regulation. And indeed, my main research and interests are about applying different kind of models and developing those models for clinical data.
We two met the first time in Leuven, at University of Leuven, where we both worked. You did your PhD there, and I did my first postdoc there. And I met you when you had just published your plus one paper in 2013 about the vector autoregressive multilevel model. And we will talk about ESM data today, or EMA data, and about multilevel VAR. Could you give us a brief kind of a summary of what these words mean, and what the model does, and what ESM data is?
Yeah. So, let's start with the ESM data. That's a new kind of data and it's upcoming. So more and more people are gathering the kind of data. Mm-hmm. And it stands for Experiling Sampling Method. And the idea is that you have more ecological valid data. So instead of just measuring a person once in the lab, for example, you are measuring persons multiple times a day for a longer period. And, well, while they're doing just their regular daily routines.
Okay, and you developed a model that can model these kind of data.
Yes, because with these kind of data, there are a lot of difficulties. Mm-hmm. Makes it very complex when you measure somebody multiple times. You get some correlation because when I measure myself and I answer all the time if I'm happy or not, it will be likely related to each other. Mm-hmm. So we developed among other people as well, for example, Naomi Schuurman and Anna Haamaker, but Francis Duerlich, Danny Worsbaum, and me developed a multilevel vector autoregressive model. And in this model, you can take both the group effects and the individual effects into account.
Okay, that means we can get at the personalized networks of, let's say, 10 patients we have in the data set. And we can see that for one patient, sad mood often leads to or predicts suicidal ideation. And for another patient, the opposite might be the case. But we can also get a group level network where we can see how, on average, the symptoms of these 10 patients would act over time.
Yes.
Indeed. Okay. These models have been applied a lot in the last years to all sorts of data. I think ESM is on the rise, and rightfully so, because we can get at these important temporal effects. What are the main shortcomings or challenges or problems with these kind of methods? Because in cross-sectional data, where I've worked a bit more, the main challenge I see is interpretability. So we have large data sets, we have large samples, we can get a cross-sectional network, we can estimate it quite reliably if we have large enough samples. But of course, this is limited by the cross-sectional nature of the data. So I think that the data that you get to work with is much more interesting in this regard. But what are the main challenges that lie ahead?
I think the main challenge is, in general, its complexity. It's nice that you have this movie over time instead of just a snippet, one snapshot of a person, but you also get indeed even more information, so to speak. And the idea that you can now just model the process is a nice idea, but the process may also change over time. And I don't think that we've take that enough into consideration. It's actually very interesting if the process itself also changes over time. But then how are you going to model that? And how should we go about? I think that's a very difficult challenge.
And so my understanding is that because of the complexity, we have to make a couple of assumptions at the moment in most of the models. And one of the main assumptions that you just, I think, talked about is that we average coefficients over time, that we say, you know, yes, in the first 10 measurement points, we see A predicting B, and then the next 10 measurement points, maybe we see B predicting A. But for most of the models, because we cannot estimate all of these parameters, we need to make the assumption that the association of A and B will be the same over time, roughly. And that would hide a lot of important information.
Exactly, because we're often interested in the change. The therapist wants to change somebody who's having depression.
Okay. And I think from memory, I hope this is correct, that you have a paper about these time varying models in psychological methods.
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
We'll link to it down below in the description. And I think Jonas Hasselbeck at Amsterdam has also been working on time varying models.
Yes, exactly. And I also worked together with Jonas Hasselbeck recently to compare these models.
Oh, cool.
Mine are spline based and his are kernel based, and they work very similar. So yeah, these models are in development, but already a big problem which we saw is that they work well, but you need even more time points, like 200 time points, depending on the exact process you're studying.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're also working on a paper with Jonas together to write this down.
Yes.
Okay, when can we expect that? When can we expect to read that?
Yeah, I think we're quite far. I think in November we will submit it, and then at the latest, and then I think Jonas will put it online.
Exciting to see that these changing dynamics are taken into account now. If we know how many observations and time points we need for these kind of models, that will give people more reason in grant applications to say, hey, but we really need 200 time points or 250, yeah, and not just 50. So maybe it'll give researchers a lever, basically, to convince funding agencies to give them money for more extended studies.
Yeah, especially with healthy subjects where it should be possible. And I think also more and more, also here in Groningen and Marieke Wiggers, for example, they are collecting more and more time points per subject. I think that's really a good thing.
Okay, so I'm excited about the first applications of these time varying methods to ESM data. What other challenges do you see? You also briefly mentioned personalized versus group level modeling,
yeah,
in time series. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a really big issue. We're doing a lot of group studies or randomized controlled trials, or a lot of methods we develop are multi-level vector autoregressive models, and they all go from that you need a group, and then you can say something about the group, and sometimes also something about the individual. But if you want to say something about individuals going from these multi-level based models, the individuals should not be too heterogeneous. So they should have some similarity amongst them. If they are too different, you cannot even use those multi-level models. So my worry is a bit, aren't we stepping too fast to the multi-level part? Shouldn't we focus even more on individuals and individuals-based analysis? And what kind of analysis are out there for just individuals?
I think I totally agree. And there has been a movement, I would say, in psychopathology towards a bit more ideographic sciences.
Yes.
I think Peter Molyneux wrote this 2004 manifesto that people, including me, cite quite a bit.
Yes.
And I think Ellen Haumarkers and Marieke Wichers and others have put great importance on this. I think Aaron Fisher from Berkeley recently put a paper online, including a data set where he looked at, I don't know by heart, but quite a few patients. I think he had 18 or 20 variables of anxiety and depression. And in his paper, he stresses the importance of these ideographic analyses, showing that these patients differ rather fundamentally from each other in their symptom interactions, and arguing that you could cater treatment, or you should cater treatment or an intervention to these particular network structures, contrasting, the group level network structure. And I think essentially this is an empirical question. We could just find out whether people differ strongly enough from each other to warrant these personalized networks,
yeah,
or whether, and I think the multi-level VAR model that you mentioned does this pretty nicely, because we can get some kind of a variability network that shows us how much people differ from each other.
Yes, yes, that's true. It shows it already nicely, and we see that it does. There is a lot of variability.
Right.
But still, such a multi-level model could hide even bigger heterogeneity.
Okay. And thinking about this empirically again, I like to think about diagnosis as bottom up. And so far, we've kind of looked at it more top down. We take these DSM diagnoses and then we enroll patients. I think it would be cool as an empirical exercise to simply find out whether certain edges in the network generalize across people with the same condition, or maybe even across different psychiatric groups, anxiety disorder and major depression. Maybe the link between insomnia and concentration problems and fatigue would be the same for these patients. It would be cool if we could just find that out. So,
yes, yes. I think that would be a really, really nice project, that you just start bottom up and then you try to cluster somehow these edges together and see if you can find the things we defined top down, if you can also find it bottom up.
Yeah.
Or if you make different criteria even.
Okay, another big challenge I think that we have is the gap between methodology and clinical practice. And we're sitting here today because we have a meeting on that. But I've also heard that you have a project coming up on this, a pretty large interdisciplinary project. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to pitch the project.
Yes, so I'm very excited about this project. It's a project about how can we make experience sampling method, how well does it work for people who are undergoing therapy? That's the basic idea. We have all this experience sampling data. Is it already ready to use in therapy? Or are there some difficulties out there? The project was started by the iLab, that's an audiographic focus lab here, interdisciplinary in Groningen. And the idea was there already, and then Jojanneke Bastiaans, Joram Kunkels, Kasper Albers and me picked up this project, as we are a nice combination of clinical-focused researchers and statistic-focused research. And the idea was then mainly, okay, if we now just take a data set of one person that is measured several times, so experience sampling data of a clinical person with depression or anxiety or combined, and we give this to several experts in the field, what would they come up with? Which symptoms do they think that need to be addressed by a therapist? Say they have to advise a therapist. That's the basic idea. What will the experts say about what symptoms need to be addressed? What will they advise the therapist? And will this advice be all over the place, or will it be very similar from expert team to expert team?
So you have different researchers who are experts in network methodology and clinical science analyze the same data set of one patient?
Yeah, so the patient comes from the Aaron Fisher data set.
Yeah.
So we just picked one person of that. And we have several experts, and they have to be an expert either in experience sampling methods, applying models to experience sampling data, or they come more from the clinical side and just apply, often use those data themselves. But it's pretty difficult to find people who really are expert in either of those, more the clinical side of experience sampling data or more the psychometric side of
it. Right. So these different teams will work independently, I assume?
Yes, they have to work independently.
Okay, cool. And then they will write up the method section, in the sense that we use this in this model, because as you said before, there's quite a few models you can use now.
Yeah.
And it's an open question how well these models perform compared to each other. And then these people will estimate network structures and then perform network inference. You know, how does the network look like? What does it mean? And then as a result, they will give clinical recommendations.
Yes, they say you should start with this symptom or these symptoms. That's the idea, indeed.
So what's the expectation of you and the co-PIs on the project? How will it look like? Will people agree, or will there be largely disagreement, or...
Well, there are already over half of the results
are
already
in. So you could peak already.
Yes, so not everything is in yet. And what you see there are some differences. I'm not sure if it's all over the place, but that's very possible. That's what I would expect up front. And I also find it interesting to see how much similarity there are between the methods used. And it doesn't, I think, lead per se. That's what I would expect. Even if you use same kind of method, it doesn't lead per se to the exact same advice. So that's also interesting.
Right. So I could have five people or five teams using the exactly same method.
Yeah.
That would result in the exactly same network structure. But the clinical advice that you draw from that might, of course, depend on your clinical background, on your prior experiences. In Germany, for example, we still have a pretty strong psychoanalytic tradition. And these people would likely give different advice than CBT therapists, for example.
Yes.
Okay.
And even if they all use some kind of factor autoregressive model, say, because that's very popular at the moment, you can make so many choices of what you include exactly and what you don't include in that kind of models and how you go about, that even that can lead to very different results. That is what I would expect.
Right. So technically people could... Say, for example, suicidal ideation in this patient has a very low mean all across the board. So we just exclude it from the model because we don't think it's very relevant.
Yes, exactly.
Or people could use different ways to regularize the network, or to control for spurious connections.
Yes.
It's not really, we don't really have a standard yet, and that would lead to different results possibly.
Yes, so I really think that this project will give a first peek in what is there, what is out there, and how well does it converge at the moment, and maybe a first step even in, are these analyses ready for the clinical practice?
That's super cool. I think that's very exciting, and I'm looking forward to read the paper, hopefully the first preprint pretty soon. Okay, great. Thanks for making time and allowing me to pick your brain regarding your cool project. Have a nice day, and I think we need to go to the meeting now.
Yes, okay. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.